Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, I'd like to put a disclaimer before this episode. When it was recorded, Russia had not invaded Ukraine. We cover the space race, Russia is heavily mentioned, and we do even for a moment mention the potential invasion as that was the status at the time of recording. Although what is currently unfolding is not in relation to the vast majority of conversation we had, I just wanted to make sure to note that we were not purposefully not mentioning the news of the invasion, as like I said, it hadn't happened at the time of the recording. Also, know that my thoughts and prayers are with Ukraine, as well as our national leaders making really big decisions. Thanks for listening, and here's the episode. Welcome back to the Kennedy Dynasty Podcast. I'm your host, Allison, and today I'm joined by one guest that everyone loves every single time he's on. It is my pal, John Driver.
Hey, how you doing, Allison?
I am good. Would you like to tell the people the fact that you're not caught up on my podcast?
Guys, everybody, it's been a long day of sordid discussions about it.
It has. Okay, so let me take you back. So we were talking today about the fact that I am so caught up on John's that I go back and listen to old episodes because I just love it. It's just a really good podcast. Yeah. And so I was like, hey, did you hear this one particular episode? And he was like, no. Oh, man, I'm not caught up.
It's a dead-on impression.
Yeah, it actually was. Yeah. And I was like, okay. I mean, I like really wanted you to listen to this one episode. I remember sending it, but that's fine.
I know.
And then I was like, okay, well, like how behind are you? Yeah. And you refused to tell me. I even said, get out your phone and tell me, and you wouldn't. So that means it's bad.
No, it's bad. It's bad because, and I told you this, I'm behind on everything I ever listen to right now. But I am very ashamed. So if that makes you feel, I feel like my shame is not making you feel any better.
No, it's not. Actually, I think what bothers me the most is that I had a recent episode that was so good and I sent it to you over and over and you still haven't listened to it.
That's my fault.
Yeah.
Now, I had COVID. Is that going to help at all?
No.
Because you're thinking, you're sitting around doing nothing or whatever. And then
we're 2 years into this. Who hasn't?
I've been traveling almost every weekend for volleyball with my family.
Well, they would love the podcast.
I don't know if my daughter...
I love her and she loves me, but I don't know if she would enjoy the Kennedy Dynasty podcast. I would say that.
She's 13.
Right.
Yeah, it's not her vibe. She's not there yet. And I'm behind on everything. I'm behind on my book reading. I'm not listening to any other podcasts right now. So,
do you go back and listen to your own?
I'm behind on that too. Occasionally I go back to see how
I have to listen to my own.
I want to know how it went.
Yeah.
I'll go back and be like, oh, okay, but not usually the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I might catch, 5-10 minutes to,
that's what I do.
Usually I'm just checking to make sure it actually published correctly, but no, I'm even behind on my own.
Yeah.
So, but I would like to openly, express a lot of regret and apologize and, will it make a difference when I catch up?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so...
But it has to be within, the week. My episodes are so short.
So, okay, you need me to catch up on the entire podcast.
What?
I don't know.
How
I don't know how many. I don't
you?
Know how many.
I think this is my either 77th or 78th episode.
So, I don't know how many behind
You've
I
listened
am.
To two, haven't you?
No, I've listened to more than two.
Yeah, you've at least listened to how many you're on, haven't you? You've at least gotten that far.
See, I knew that was going to come up. The thing is, if I listen to the ones I'm on, it's out of insecurity. It's like, oh, did I make Allison's podcast suck that day?
Oh, whatever.
You know what I'm saying? Like, did I add anything of value or did I sound like an idiot?
No, you're like, wow, I sounded wonderful. What a point that was. I don't know why I just went to that accent.
You turn British all of a sudden.
I don't know. Yeah. It's more intellectual than I think our Southern accents.
So my internal self, you think, has an intellectual British accent. So that would be awesome.
Yeah, but I could see that, actually.
Like, I often think about my dog, and I speak in a really ridiculous voice for the dog. But then I think, what if inside, truly, there's this brilliant statesman?
There's something
there.
What
I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he knows this, what I'm saying. And he's just like, why do you, demean me so much as if I'm... diminutive as this small little dog, but inside he's using great words.
Let me tell you why I'm bothered. You have that much time to think about your dogs and your monologue, but you haven't caught up on my podcast.
Well, this is the mind of a creative.
Yeah.
I don't have a choice but to think about that. I read something this week that talked about, it said, it was trying to get you to understand the thoughts inside of your mind that might not be true. It's really healthy to go, oh, okay, this thought feels so true. But sometimes you have to redirect your thoughts. And it made, the author made this sort of statement that you don't have a choice but to think about something. Like, you can't think about nothing.
Yeah.
So that's what goes through my mind. There's all kinds of stuff.
No, that's true.
If I could I'm trying to just redirect it all, but I can't stop it. So yes, the inner monologue of my dog is something in there. And yes, it's dumb, but so am I. So here we are, full circle.
I would like to preface and tell the audience before I get hate mail, people be like, you're so mean to your friend. Y'all, I'm joking. It's fine. It's really fine. I'm totally okay with it.
And I'd like to also say, I really do love your podcast.
Thanks. Appreciate you.
I absolutely do.
And as long as you're subscribed and you give me that download.
You get the download. Good. And I would say I've listened to your podcast more than anybody else's.
Okay. So that's good. Yeah.
So, yeah.
This has gone on so long. I was talking about this. Like, people are, hey, I'm going to watch the chart.
It's
like,
going to be going down.
Yeah.
You know what? I think the point of the whole thing has been for me is how awesome my podcast is.
You can't stop
listening to it.
Talk about that. It's truly my favorite podcast. I say it all the time. It truly is.
I mean, and if people wanted to listen to it, they could go to talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
They can.
But they don't have to.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Of course. And I will link it in the show notes because it is great. Also, I wanted to address something on the podcast. Mm. So this has not been something, I'm very private on my podcast before, and you guys, we do have a topic today. We will get to it, but I had to say this. I'm very private on the podcast, and as you know, as good friends with me and Jeffrey, I have had a long period of time of building a platform and kind of figuring out what that meant for me, whether as far as privacy goes or just my life in general, what do I share? This podcast is not about me necessarily. It's about, you know, the Kennedys and stuff like that. So I've had a time of trying to figure that out. So I have not shared a big part of my life on the podcast.
Right.
And on Instagram, if you're not following me there, at Kennedy Dynasty, you should be following. Lots of fun over there. Anyway, I shared a clip and there was a car seat in the back of my car. Mm. And I started getting lots of messages like, wait, I'm sorry, what?
Jeffrey's really small.
Yeah, he's tiny. We have to get started back. But lots of questions. People like, are you a nanny? Like, what's going on? You know? So you should go read my post on Instagram. I made a big post about the fact that, yes, I have kids. I am a mother. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just haven't shared that aspect for privacy reasons, just because, like I said, it's just not about me necessarily. But yeah. I think I've built, you know, people really, I've connected with people really well on Instagram and here. And I do feel like I've built a community with that I should be more transparent with. So I don't know. I got a lot of really positive comments of people being like, wow, you're a working mom who's done this and built this. Like, that's so inspiring, things like that. And so I wrote a letter on Instagram to moms just saying, trying to encourage them to find something for themselves, because that's very much what this was for me. It was something that Jeffrey was always working. Everyone around me had a thing.
Yeah.
And my thing was taking care of my kids, which is wonderful. And I completely commend people that is their life goal, life passion. That's very fulfilling to them. Commend that. I think it's fantastic. But my brain personally needed something that was just mine.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, that's what this podcast really birthed out of. During the pandemic, and the story that people know so well of me just kind of grabbing a mic and going with it. And then it worked, shockingly, and it's become a thing. So anyway, I just wanted to address that and talk about it. Let everybody here know that, yes, I have a family, and that's one of the reasons that this is so much work for me. I mean, an insane amount of work for me, because I run a house and a family, and I have another part-time job, and I have a lot going on. But I just really prioritize this for myself because it's become something really important to me, and I'm really proud of it. So
yeah, and you put so much into this. And the fact that you do it juggling the family, and your family's wonderful, by the way.
Oh yeah.
And the way that you juggle your family, I mean I'm not just trying to brag on you, I mean, but it really demonstrates, I think, a propensity for the topic, number one, but also a drive, because doing things, producing things, they don't just happen. I mean, there is a huge process and a lot of sacrifice you put into it. So, no, and just from my vantage point, not that you asked, I mean, I think it's okay not to publicize everything about your family.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, like you said, this is not a podcast. My podcast is a lot of personal stuff, and I talk about being a dad and all those kinds of things. You know, yours is a very different topic. And so, you know, I think that's great, and I'm glad the listeners are learning, you know, that you have that side to you. But I also understand why you wouldn't just go publicizing right now that. So, you know.
I think it just, this platform, it's not like it's massive or anything, but it got really big really fast, almost to the point, it's shockingly so. So it was to the point that it was kind of like, okay, well, what do I share here? What do I do here? Mm-hmm. You know? But I kind of said, I really do encourage you guys to go read it, because I just kind of said, like, I feel like I should have shared that all along, because I really do think that I could encourage maybe other mothers that maybe feel that there's a feeling of, God, you love your children and your babies so much, and you want to pour your life and your soul into them, and you do, and it's a constant every day. But sometimes I think it's important that, although motherhood is such a central, if not the most important part of some people's life, my life, you know, I think it's important that mothers don't get lost in that or lose a piece of themselves and still have something for themselves. And so, I don't know, I just wanted to encourage other people to, you know, find something, a hobby or something that interests them, and go for it. And don't know what it is, Google, like, find something for you. And I just think it's been really, it's been mentally wonderful for me. It's given such experiences and amazing things. And I don't know, I'm really thankful. I feel very fulfilled in that way right now. So
Doing more than one thing does not diminish motherhood.
No. Yeah. It doesn't. And I think that I don't know, there's a lot of stigmas around, you know, that. And so that's a whole other conversation in and of itself. But I'm just really thankful for the audience, and it's allowed me to have something for me that I really enjoy, and I'm proud of the work that I put into it. It hasn't been easy to keep going with it. That would have been very easy to quit, and it still would be easy to quit. I don't want to. It's a lot, but I wanted to share that here. So,
yeah.
Big part of my life.
Yeah.
Biggest part of my life. I have children. Plural. Literally children. So,
No, well, I'm sure everyone appreciates you sharing that. And I think it does empower people. It doesn't have to be something public or something produced. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a lot of other things that we can... that parents in general, and especially, I know my wife could speak to this so much more in her life. She's a professional who works from home, who, you know, we also have always been able to have our child at home until school age and those things. And so it's a balance, and it's hard, but like you said, it's okay. Motherhood, fatherhood, none of these things all look the same. We make them very monolithic, that everyone, this is what a good mom looks like, or this is what a, you know, it's difficult to put people into one box like that. So I think seeing what you're doing it may help people out there go, hey, I don't have to look exactly the same. I mean, comparison is just it's a dangerous game as it is. And so, you know, find out where you are, find your boundaries in the right places, and know that it's okay to have more than one thing.
Yeah. And I didn't say all that to like pat myself on the back or anything like that. I just was trying to be transparent.
She is literally patting herself on the back. I don't know how she's doing it. Her arm is very flexible.
No, I think I just wanted to share here as well, because I had so many people be like, wait, what? Why have you never mentioned your kids? Like, people in the comment section were like, that's kind of weird. Why have you not said that? Or people were really encouraging and kind, like, wow, that makes me see the show a little differently, you know, that there was more going on in your life behind the scenes and you kind of made it work anyway. So anyway, I just want to share that I have no way to tie that into our topic at all, but today's topic is the space race. And John's going to teach me in this, honestly, y'all. I mean, I obviously know, you know, JFK's Rice University, we choose to go to the moon. I know all of the things around that, but I wanted to really dive into a more worldly look at the space race, why this was a thing, where was the competition laying, why and how, and all the intricacies of it. So I just want you, history teacher, take it away and tell us all the things.
Well, and again, jump in with anything.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know. This is not exactly, I'd say, my specialty of knowledge base, but I'm always fascinated by the trends. And of course, Kennedy is a part of those trends, but I think he's not an origination of a lot of them. He's a continuation that then, in my opinion, created sort of a new face to a lot of the things, but they didn't just happen on his watch. Like, he was perpetuating something. And I think often we see him as the face of some things, especially in the space race. But technically, the space program, I believe, was started mid-50s. And if you really go back, this is all a World War II downstream effect, because especially of rocket technology that they're trying to develop. And so that's always the case throughout all of history. Wars, they are horrible. And I'm not sure there's anything that can justify the human loss of those wars. If there's anything positive that it comes out of them, it's that there's always an advancement, a vast advancement in technology. And certainly for the United States, there was a vast advancement of economic really superiority in the world. You know, especially in World War One, and again, I'm not trying to go back so far, but World War II is actually a continuation of World War One, because at the end of World War One, there's this armistice that Germany is not happy about. And really, they use their discontentment of the terms of that armistice, especially in the 30s during the Depression. Hitler and the Nazi Party are able to use the discontentment of that armistice to really build a narrative, a fascist narrative that, hey, you know, this is unfair. Everything's been taken away from you. It's particularly the Jews are to blame for a lot of that, because they're taking, you know, the good jobs and the money and all those things. And so you get people desperate enough and mad enough, and I think we see that in today's world. You get people looking at or being terrified of or showing hatred towards or even considering a group of people to be inhumane. It doesn't have to even be all racial, okay? It was certainly ethnic towards the Jews, but you can take anyone who's your ideological enemy and you can dehumanize them. And then if they're no longer human to you, it justifies anything you want to do to them. And so that continuation led into the World War II, which again is just, to me, part two of the same war. And in that war then, because of the advancement of technology in the first part, now the advancement of technology is moving so much faster, so much greater because of the need to try to win the war. And that's really that rocket, specifically rocket technology, you know, that leads to, you know, and missiles and all those things that they're trying to develop. It's atomic energy that is harnessed in a different way, in a tragic way. But man, all of a sudden you come to 1945, 1946, and the entire geopolitical chessboard has been repositioned. And suddenly you have the United States, who certainly went in as a major world power, but emerged as the major world power, versus Russia, who came in as obviously a strong historical power and emerges with unprecedented power in Eastern Europe. And that's the epicenter, the dividing line, you know, right down the middle of Berlin of the Cold War. And both sides are now sitting on top of so much power and so much technological advancement that suddenly there's this tension. And so Cold War, someone asked today in a staff meeting, you know, who was president during the Cold War? It's like, well, I mean, many people were president during the Cold War. It's this tension that's almost necessary in some ways for what we think of as how the world works. It would not have been the way that people thought of it before. I'm not sure you could remove from modern American thought, or possibly even modern Western thought, possibly even modern world thought. I'm not sure how Russian people think of this. But I know for my generation, and I'm, you know, an 80s and 90s kid, and for me, just this idea of the Russians being dangerous and being our enemy and being strong, and we have to show a strong force against them and their advancement, and that's the Marshall Doctrine. You know, this advancement of communism has to be stopped by the advancement of democracy, which justifies, again, a whole series of other conflicts and wars in the world. The greatest ones being Korea and Vietnam, where a great loss of life happens, and people in the United States at some point come to the conclusion that, why are we doing this? Why are we fighting a war in an Asian country that we seemingly have, you know, no real connection to? And then the answer is the Cold War, and how the space race plays into all of this is that technology and that sort of superiority or supremacy, who's going to win this race? And that's why they put race, I mean, with this. It is literally a race to see who the main superpower of the world can be, and both feel that they need to offset the other. And it's really the story of the 20th century post-World War II. Because they were allies in World War II. And now divvying up what is left of Europe in particular, it just changed the way it went. And I think that space was like the thing we could all do or all shoot for that would establish dominance. And so there's a national pride. And then, you know, a lot of this, the wars, post-wars are where we get, you know, pledges of allegiance, where we get, you know, national anthems. And other things throughout history, they arise out of this sort of convergence and congealing of the public around a central cause, and then, you know, emerging. And often they arise from really unfortunate circumstances where we need to put people into, I wouldn't say necessarily concentration camps, but internment camps, and in some countries, concentration camps, in order to establish who the real Germans are and who the real Americans are. And both countries did this at times in our history. And that's where sort of this nationalism comes out, this national pride. And I'm all for patriotism. I really am. I think that where it crosses into this and what we see here, like Space Race shows us this, that the stakes are super high, that there's no amount of money that we are not willing to spend, not just to gain the next technological advancement, but literally to outdo our international opponent. And that became sort of the, you know, who's going to be first. And that's the tension of the entire mid to late 20th century. And the space race is just a great example of it, because it really was like a who can plant the flag first kind of thing. And of course, you know, you have two components. And Allison, I've talked a long time now. You're willing to chime in if you'd like to.
I'm just listening. No, okay. I'm good. Yeah, I'm learning.
Well, you get two components here, you know, and that's just a fascinating look into the American psyche.
Okay, ladies, I cannot wait to share this company with you. OneWith is patent-pending, ultra-flattering women's swimwear that fits and feels like seamless undergarments. And I'm telling y'all, when I put my suit on for the first time, I've never felt better in swimwear. It is so flattering and truly feels one with your body. The founder is a lifelong New Englander and Kennedy enthusiast, and the name, in addition to referencing the fact that the suits are one with a woman's body, is also partially inspired by the JFK quote where he alludes to us being one with the sea. The brand is based in and focuses on New England, and they even have a piece named after Hyannisport, the Hyannis bikini top. I, of course, love all the Kennedy references used by OneWith. Their swimwear is available in sizes extra small to 3X, and all patterns and colors can be mixed and matched. They have some super cute accessories, too. I'm telling you, ladies, you won't regret adding OneWith to your closet. And I even have a 20% off coupon for Kennedy Dynasty listeners. Just click the link in the description of this episode to lead you to onewithswim.com and enter code KENNEDY20 for 20% off. Again, that's KENNEDY20, K-E-N-N-E-D-Y 20, 2-0, no spaces, for 20% off. Happy shopping.
We kind of feel like we won, right? I don't know what age you are if you're listening.
You mean with the moon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we landed the first man who walked on the moon. It's mm-hmm. like, yeah, you know, America won. And there's a fascinating show on, I believe it's Apple Plus, called For All Mankind.
Yeah, that is on there. I haven't seen it, but I know it's there.
Yeah. And it's like it has this sort of butterfly effect premise of what would have happened if Russia would have beat us to the moon. But if you read historically, Russia kind of feels like they did beat us in the space race in some ways. They were the first ones. Was it 1957?
Mm-hmm.
The first ones to put Sputnik, right, into space.
Yes.
So in 1959, they actually put an object on the moon. I mean, that's 1959. And you got to think, all of humanity's been staring at the moon. I mean, it's still this mysterious object. That's why there's so many conspiracy theories about whether or not this actually happened. Like, it's still so almost far-fetched to the modern mind to think that would be possible. And I think you bring that momentum into Kennedy's mindset. I think he brings this sort of youthful energy to an already old tension. So you got to think about the tension. This has been going on now. If you go back to World War I, again, you think of this all as one continual story. We love in modern history sort of takes to be like, oh, what do you like to study? I like to study this. I like to study that. And this is one story. And even the American history part is one story within a much grander story. And so we like to sort of isolate and silo the whole thing. But truthfully, it's one thing. And so if you go into that grand story, this has been a long, long process. And American presidents through that process, you know, from Truman, FDR, I mean, it's interesting. Have you seen the movie Hidden Figures?
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, that was actually, so there's these, you know, so many black female mathematicians who were used by NASA really before the advent of computers to calculate all of the minutia in the distances and other things. And they brought in into, it was part of, though, FDR's sort of, I forget exactly which executive order or thing that he passed to add more African-American jobs to the process, but that was one of the results, as it brought them into the process. Now, they were they were not honored. They were in separate facilities, paid differently, all kinds of different things that shows the black eye on our nation's history of these things, even when we included there was not an equality that should have been given. And this is pre-modern civil rights movement and all those things. So he was pretty progressive for their day, but not at all progressive right. enough, and still not something that's acceptable. But in that process, though, you see, okay, already now FDR is beginning the process, and then it moves forward. And Truman, obviously, with dropping the bomb, you couldn't go back technologically after that. At this point, and we can't overlook that, the bomb creates the backdrop of things like the space race, because the real, like, even if you can't convince people why geopolitically democracy is better than communism and we need to make sure that we don't let, communism spread because it's a threat to our way of life, eventually it'll spread just like Germany did, with fascism, it'll spread all the way through across Europe. And so there's some validity to that sort of, I guess, stance against Russian advancement.
Yeah.
But
that's like domino theory, right?
Yeah. So things are going to get bad if we let them do it. And, right. and I think there's validity to that. But man, now we had actually detonated on people, on an enemy, a horrible atomic blast that now becomes the flashpoint for fear of why the Cold War was a thing. Because it's not just that Russia might invade, it's that Russia might destroy us, wipe us off the face of the planet. And they had the same fear about us, and we had the ability, and so did they, to do so. All kinds of movies in the 80s, I don't know if you remember that, there was an old movie, I can't remember what it was called. Our friend Johnny will be yelling right now because he knows all those things.
But Johnny's caught up on the podcast, so.
Is he? Okay.
I don't know.
He probably is. There was a movie in the 80s, I think it was called War Games, actually, and it was like an early, looked like Pong, almost kind of video game, and there's this really, really smart kid, and he manages to hack into like the national defense computer, and somehow the computer gets confused and is convinced that it's a real war game, and so it begins to... It's like there's this countdown sequence. It thinks Russia is firing on us. And this kid is the one who hacked it all, basically. So he's getting picked up by the CIA. And it's like this whole adventure thing. And he's trying to stop the computer, convince the computer that it's just a game and not, because it was something the national defense people had created to try right. to create all these scenarios. And somehow the computer thought it was real. I mean, but that's a great movie in the 80s because... Everybody had lived their lives in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and now in the 80s and up until the fall of the Berlin Wall, believing that's a real possibility, and it really was. And so in some ways, almost like the space race creates like this outlet, like this non-destructive outlet, that hey, we're going to get there and this is good, as opposed to we're going to have more nuclear missiles that can wipe off our enemies off the face of the earth. And so it sort of gave, I think, in my mind, almost good energy to a really bad thing and a lot of tension. And you think about how kids were terrified, and I hear stories from my parents and grandparents over the years. I mean, all of the nuclear sort of tests in school where the drills.
Horrifying.
Go get under the chair. And like, if you know anything about it, getting under the chair is not going to help at all.
Right.
And so lots of anxiety. And suddenly now there is this excitement over the most, storied part of human history of looking up at the skies and knowing, wow, there's someone who's going to be stepping on that and we can be the first to get there. So it raises national pride. And it also then gives you a reason to do it fast because someone else is trying to get there ahead of you. So this plays so much into a capitalistic, sort of mindset of American exceptionalism and other things. But that all has good and bad things to it. I'm not saying it's all negative. But certainly I think Kennedy, man, he just steps in at just the right time in some ways, like to say, wow, I am the face of that progressive part of American exceptionalism and ideology that says we can go and do things we've never been able to do before, and we can do it faster than we thought. And so the reason you hold a little phone in your hand listening to this podcast today is that sort of ideology, that sort of mindset that says always push forward, you can do more than you thought, and suddenly not even the moon is out of reach. And it still is crazy to me to this day that even the moon's not out of reach. And the Russians, now how they – it doesn't feel like there was such – I don't know. maybe there was the same nationalistic fervor. I don't know. We'd have to have someone on to talk about that viewpoint. I don't know if it like was the same level of excitement and pride. I do know, again, to this day, though, a lot of the Russian historians seem to feel that, well, actually, Russia gets downplayed in this. They were the first ones to do a lot of the things into space, yes. Just not this one thing we all decided was the most important.
Yeah, because we decided it was the most important. Well, that's interesting that you say that, though, because I do wonder if from their vantage point, if they're actually like they don't think it's that big of a deal that we beat on the moon. I don't know. Maybe they think, oh no, it was more important that we put a man there first. Kind of interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you get to...
And so someone knows that's listening right now. Yeah. It's like, I know this answer. But yeah, that's very interesting. And I kind of liked what you talked about, how Kennedy just brought such a new aspect to so many things. I mean, you think about before him, he had Truman, then he had Eisenhower, and then you have Kennedy, who... Those three humans could not be more different. He brings the idea of the new frontier in. And then you have what happens in 61, which would be fairly fresh into his presidency. Russia puts a man into space first. And that kind of makes Kennedy and everybody, you know, antsy. So they immediately, a month after, put a man into space. And then 1962, John Glenn goes into space. He's the first man to ever orbit the Earth.
Yes. And so Alan Shepard's the first American to go into space.
Yes.
Right. John Glenn's the first to orbit the Earth. Yeah. And again, it's the one-upsmanship of the whole thing.
Yeah, it's just constant. Think about the month. There's a month between like us sending someone anyway. And then, you know, Kennedy makes his statement, like, we choose to go to the moon in this decade. Like, it's going to happen, you know, and that's so profound. And I wonder... if that kind of lit a fire for Russia.
Sure.
Oh, it would have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you think about...
You want to put your flag there first.
Yeah. And I mean, and there's no precedent for what it means to put your flag on the moon first. And that's kind of, by the way, what For All Mankind plays out. Like, there's like a Russian moon camp. They go deep into it. And then an American moon camp. And there's like battles between the two at point, you know. Because it's like, you know, I mean, who claim? It's very much like European explorers claiming new world lands, which obviously people already lived there, but nobody's living in the moon that I know of. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how that, you know, I think we still don't know how so much of that works. It's such a vast place. And then, of course, the space program, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s kind of went away for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of its prominence, because it was such an expenditure for what? And you got to think, Cold War, in theory, had ended. So you almost go, well, what's the point now if we don't have our enemies to outdo in order to maintain our side of the tension? So I don't know that historically if it's completely true outside of the grand cost. But early in American or mid-20th century American history, we were completely willing to spend any amount to beat the Russians here and see that as a national security you know, highlight, this is what we have to do. And then later on in history, we don't have that threat. It seems like we are way less interested in terms of going. So I think it affected a lot of their time to have that enemy, that existential enemy, does a lot for you. And I think that's where American history today is very difficult. The war on terror is a different kind of existential enemy because it's not a national one. And so when you have a nation, you can point your guns at, and they point their guns at you. Certainly the Nazis, I mean, a horrible enemy that you know has plans to destroy you, to take over. Our options are clear. I've read somewhere an author said, you know, nothing so marvelously clears the mind as a lack of choices, you know. So when all the choices are gone and we know what we have to do, it sort of brings out a lot of greatness in you. Why we call it the greatest generation. You know, they did what they had to do. There was no other choice but to do it. And a lot hung in the balance. That spirit, in my opinion, continued into the 50s and 60s because now we're having to continue to keep us safe. And the best way to do that is to stay dominant. Stay dominant because this enemy can't be trusted, but they're still a national enemy. Then you get into the early 2000s, and suddenly the nature of our enemies change. Not that we still don't have national enemies. But we don't have as many, although right now there's a lot of tension, obviously, with Russia. But we're talking about sanctions right now if they invade Ukraine. You know, the difference is a, why would we say that? Because we're allies economically. It's a global economy at this point. And so, yeah, even if China, there's always tensions with China, the trillions of dollars flowing between the two countries, you know, and that was kind of, not to nerd out, that was kind of Alexander Hamilton's whole point of being willing to go into national debt, is it ties your country to other countries. And so they're less likely to attack you if you're dependent upon one another economically. And so we kind of see that convergence of all those things in the 21st century in a way that it wasn't the same, you know, until the fall of the Berlin Wall and the end of the Cold War as we knew it. There, I mean, it still persisted in other ways, but the end of it as we knew it. And I think that that also altered the course of the space race in terms of the mindset of we have to win now.
So. Sure. I still do think it was and still to this day is a really admirable feat. I mean, I do definitely think that. I think it's iconic that, you know, America, Neil Armstrong put the flag on the moon. And that's just such a part of our history that is so amazing to me that we did accomplish that in general. You know, I'm acting like I did, took part in it, but I'm just saying, I also think it was an amazing feat for Kennedy to put forward and to say, and that was so inspiring in that moment of just exploration and something to explore and, you know, pioneer and that sense. I don't know. I've always thought it was interesting that, you know, he passes away in 63 and then finally it actually does happen within the decade in 69. I think that's always kind of gotten me a little bit that it, you know, his statement kind of came true that it did happen within then. So I don't know. I do think it's a really amazing moment in our history for sure.
I think it's significant that you said that we put someone on the moon and you said, oh, it's not like I did it. Mm-hmm. I think that's what he did. I think what Kennedy did was he brought the country together
for
around
sure.
this goal.
Yeah.
That we still, generations later, go, oh, yeah, we did that.
Yeah.
So it was a part. And I don't ascribe to all of American exceptionalism because of so many negatives we see today. But I think it's okay to go, hey, there are elements to this particular democratic experiment that we can be proud of, that we need to lean into, hold accountable to its stated ideals, okay? So when our Constitution says that, you know, all men are created equal and we are not holding ourselves to that stated ideal, then we now have a reference point in order to correct. And as George Washington said in his farewell address, we have the right to create and alter our systems of government. And so we have a system that is designed to be altered. And though today there's such debate about whether we hate America or love America, and if you want to change America, you should leave. There's the door, you know. And so if you come back at someone and say, well, is there a part of America that you wish would change? Well, yeah, I mean, there is. Okay, well, why is it that someone else should leave? So the question about who is a real American is still a major thing. And I think the 50s and 60s, there were a lot of people that didn't feel like real Americans. And then there's a national consciousness, and we have to state it as it is, that was, you know, a white American consciousness in many ways. But I think that you were beginning to see, as the civil rights movement came about, that others were starting to join that fray. And a lot of white Americans were beginning to welcome them and say, hey, our stated ideals are not being met here. So civil rights legislation and change in the way that we see those things was beginning to happen, and it has a long ways to go. I do think that most Americans would say we did that.
Yeah.
And that I think Kennedy, you know, played a major role in that.
Yeah. Of the unity.
Yeah. Setting something ahead of us at a moment of, I mean, I hate to call this a cosmic distraction because I'm not sure. I mean, I'm sure our scientific advancements were huge, but it was kind of like a thing we could do because we could. We're going to do this. No one's ever done this. It's not like you're going to mine gold on the moon. They didn't know that yet, but who knows what's up there? You know, I mean, the early explorers are coming to get gold and coming to get land. And, you know, what are you going to get out of this was yet to be known. But it was an ideological, goal to be set that all Americans, and maybe all Russians too, I don't know, but the world watched.
I think there was a sense of unity. And there was a sense of unity in the way that he spoke in general as well. I mean, there was I don't think that's necessarily unique just to his presidency. I think that a lot of presidents do, you know, make sure that they state that we are all in this together. I find his words very inspiring and the accomplishment inspiring as a whole, for sure. But I do find it interesting to kind of the way that you've dissected the space race and to see that it was just kind of a interesting, like, no, I'm going to beat you. Here we go. You know, race, yeah. You know,
I wonder without it, you know, what other, if war would have taken,
would have taken up
the space of the vacuum, mm-hmm. you know, in that time. Obviously there's a lot of threats, but that's interesting to me. Not until this conversation, I really thought it that deeply that, wow, it kind of gave us, it's kind of like the Olympics. You know, the Olympics give you something to interact with and compete with, yep. with your national enemies, mm-hmm. international enemies, without having to shoot each other. And man, they hate each other a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And there's tension there and all those things. And they want to beat them so badly. At the end of the day, whoever wins, it's just bragging rights in that respect. And so it's a good, I mean, I'm not saying that the negativity towards each other is positive, but mm-hmm. it's way better than shooting missiles.
Yeah.
You know, so, and they were shooting missiles at the moon instead and putting men on them mm-hmm. instead of shooting missiles at each other. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that would hold up in a real history book or anything, but to me, it's very interesting.
It's interesting to think about. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Well, this was fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Good little chat. Thank you for joining me today, as always. So where can people follow you?
They can go on my Instagram, John Driver, @John Driver, and you can just click the link in my bio. It goes to my link tree, has all the things there, my website, my podcast, my new book that's out, and a lot of the different interviews I've been doing about that book lately. And you can go check it out.
Perfect. You guys go catch up on his podcast and let him know that you're completely caught up, please, for my sake.
By the next time that I'm on this podcast, you're not going to have anything. Like, you're going to be eating all these words.
Okay. So, I hope so.
I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
So today when we were talking about this, I asked you if you had read my latest book.
Yeah.
And there was a book that you said you had read. And I said, you read it all? And you said, well, I skimmed it.
Yeah.
So how much of that, I'm not going to say which book it was, how much of that particular book had you actually read?
Do you want to know the truth?
Yeah.
Zero.
I knew the truth. I just wanted to hear you say.
Absolute zero. I was, because he posed the question like, okay, did you read my last book? I was like, yes, I did, which I did. And you're like, what about the one before that? And I was like, yes, I did, just because I needed to say it, I guess, because I'm a liar. I don't know. And then you were like, well, what was it? And I thought of a book on my shelf, and I was like, oh, it was this one. And then luckily you didn't ask me any questions about it.
And then I felt bad because the whole table was like, whoa. We haven't even heard of that
book
before.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it came out right in the middle of the pandemic, or the beginning of the pandemic.
I don't even know how I acquired a copy.
I don't know.
But anyway, I haven't read that book.
That's so funny.
We're there. Well, make sure you are following me on Instagram @KennedyDynasty. Click the link in the description of this episode for my new merch. I have all kinds of podcast logo stuff that just came out that I think is really cool. Have you bought one yet?
Of course.
Yeah. Okay.
It's right there on my shelf.
Yeah, great. So anyway, y'all get t-shirts, sweatshirts, all the things, and I will talk to you soon.
Come on and vote for Kennedy. Vote for Kennedy. Keep America strong. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling up. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling up. Kennedy, he just keeps rolling along. Vote for Kennedy.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.